Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Kimchi, kombucha, sauerkraut, miso, and kefir, all fermented foods and drinks, have been around for centuries, but suddenly they're all the rage, aren't they? The simple reason is that they are packed full of gut-healthy bacteria, and we are finally waking up to just how much the trillions of microorganisms that live in our guts contribute to our mental and physical health. Gut health is now strongly linked to our overall well-being, including weight management, energy, and stress. The thing is, unless you're fermenting foods for yourself, these products are not cheap. Yet at just £1.50 for a 350-gram pot of Yeo Valley Kefir, this daily boost, high in protein, low in fat, and with natural and fruity flavours to choose from, is in the yogurt aisle at all the major supermarkets. To find out more, head over to yeovalley.co.uk. Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to Food for Thought, a podcast on a mission to equip you with all the evidence-based advice you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, registered nutritionist, best-selling author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In each episode, I'll be joined by special guests, all of whom can be considered authoritative voices in health, so that together we can learn fact from fiction and empower the healthiest and happiest versions of ourselves with trusted expert advice. Whether it's milk in your cereal, a delicious melted cheese toastie, or that unavoidable ice cream on holiday, many of us grew up on a diet laden with dairy and we continue to consume it regularly. In fact, it is estimated that the UK dairy industry alone is worth a staggering £28 billion, and it plays a vital role in our nation's food security. However, nowadays, we are scrutinising the food we eat more than ever before, and dairy is often bashed for being supposedly fattening and detrimental to our health as well as the health of our planet. So, should we continue relying on dairy for our nutritional needs, or is it time to, in fact, ditch dairy? Joining me today is Dr. Lee Breen, Associate Professor in Metabolic and Molecular Physiology at the University of Birmingham, whose special interest in dairy makes him perfectly positioned to sort fact from fiction. Hello, Lee. Thank you so much for coming in. Now, I've actually attended several of your lectures. I didn't go and say hello, and I should have done.
Definitely could.
But I saw you talk about this subject, and I think it's very important to mention before we kick off that we're taking ethics out. Just at the beginning, we can obviously touch on the subject. And despite someone's stance on whether or not to consume dairy, the fact is it does contain a plethora of nutrients, doesn't it? In fact,
absolutely.
Milk is described as one of the most nutritionally complete foods.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you'd have to go pretty far to find a product that's more nutrient dense than milk. What I mean by nutrient density is the nutrients that are contained within milk far outweigh its calorie cost.
Yeah, definitely.
As well. So we've got things like it's a rich source of protein, which we know we need for healthy muscles and bones. Also a source of calcium as well, healthy bones and teeth again.
Yeah.
And we've got things like potassium, phosphorus, which help play a role in energy metabolism, breaking down our food, releasing the nutrients that we need as well, lowering blood pressure, and also a host of important vitamins. So we've got vitamin B, B2, B5, B12, and they play an important role in things like helping reduce how fatigued and tired we feel, supporting our immune system, our nervous system as well, and healthy skin on top of that. So, yeah, a really nutrient-dense product, and you'd have to go pretty far to beat dairy.
No, I couldn't agree more. And I think also I think iodine is something that's often forgotten
about. Absolutely, yeah.
And something we're talking about more now because it's very hard to get it elsewhere.
A great number of individuals are iodine deficient as well. We know iodine is important in supporting thyroid function, amongst other things as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a really important source of iodine, which is deficient in a lot of children, teens and old people as well.
Yeah, it's quite worrying. And I think if we look at the fact that also dairy milk contains a complete amino acid profile, so can we touch a little bit further on what that means?
Yeah, sure. So there are 21 or 22 amino acids, depending on who you speak to.
Different books.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. Nine of those are essential or indispensable amino acids. And what that means is that our bodies can't make those amino acids themselves. We require food intake in order to get these key nine amino acids as well. So on a relative gram-for-gram basis, dairy is rich in all nine of those essential amino acids or indispensable amino acids as well. And in terms of quality, we know that dairy protein is extremely high as well. So when I talk about protein quality, what I'm talking about is the essential amino acids contained within the product in the first place, and also how efficiently those amino acids become available for all our bodily tissues. So when we've eaten the protein, how well we can digest and absorb it, and how those really important amino acids appear in our circulation.
Oh, it is so important. I think protein's often just thought of for muscular growth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rather than everything else, like you've just said, every cell in our body requires protein to function. So we've mentioned the fact that it is an important, I think most people know dairy for children and growth and development, but it's particularly known for things like deficiencies. We discussed earlier, 20% of youngsters are not getting enough B2. I've got here in front of me, 16% enough calcium, 20% enough iodine. What do you think is happening here?
I mean, it's really quite alarming. I can only assume that some of the scare stories we see in the media around the potential harms of dairy are putting people off consuming the product. So, yeah, as you mentioned, those statistics on deficiencies of certain vitamins and calcium in children are increasingly prevalent as well. And I think, unfortunately, in the marketplace, there's a shift towards milk substitutes, which may be something we talk about in more depth later on.
Yeah.
And so I think people are now choosing to replace dairy products with these substitutes as well. So, yeah, unfortunately, a lot of children are deficient. And we know that's a really key, childhood and teenage years are a really key period where you do require sufficient protein and calcium and a whole host of vitamins due to the rapid growth as well.
Well, I think that's just it, rapid growth. And why are certain vitamins and minerals we've mentioned then so important for bone and muscle health? What are the conditions or problematic things that can happen to us?
A big interest of mine is muscle health across the life course as well, and the role that protein nutrition plays in that. And from middle age onwards, we know that we experience this progressive loss of muscle mass. People lose muscle and they notice they start to get weaker as well. And obviously this increases the risk towards disability, frailty, and metabolic diseases like type 2 diabetes as well. So perhaps the most important constituent of dairy nutrition is the protein content, first of all, because, as I mentioned before, it's very high quality protein. This means that our muscles and other tissues and organs in the body can use this protein and these essential amino acids to essentially synthesize and build themselves again. So at any given time, all the tissues in our body are synthesizing and breaking down.
Wow.
The idea is that through protein nutrition, we can increase the efficiency or the rate of that synthesis. So we always have healthy levels of tissue mass.
I wish I could show our listeners the graph that you put up in your slides with the different protein synthesis, the kind of little curves,
like
the waves, the peaks, the troughs. And I think basically the more frequently you consume protein or in your snacks and your meals, the more likely you are to get the maximum benefits from that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So in response to consuming a protein-rich meal, we know that the synthesis or the building of muscle protein starts to increase. That's quite a transient response. It only lasts for several hours, which is why it's important to consume frequent protein-rich meals throughout the day. Every 4 to 5 hours would probably be as long as you would want to leave it as well. It's very important as we age as well, because we know that even older individuals who consume sufficient protein based on the daily targets or the daily requirements that are set by our government. They tend to consume this protein in an uneven fashion as well, which means they get very little protein at breakfast, a moderate amount at lunch, with the vast majority of protein coming with the evening meal as well.
Always at dinner. I see this in my clinic all the time. I think dinners seem to be the best meal of the day for so many people. We just seem to neglect our morning and afternoon serving.
I think so, yeah. I mean, people leading busy lives is one explanation for that. But in older age, there are issues around appetite regulation as well. So older people simply don't feel hungry as often as younger people. There are changes in the hormones that regulate appetite and satiety. And so getting enough and sufficient protein into older people in order to support their muscles and bones is problematic.
It's fascinating. I think there's often, the condition we're referring to, sarcopenia with muscle loss. How common is that in the UK?
Well, it's quite a contentious issue because it depends on which diagnostic criteria you go to.
Okay.
But it's thought that in the UK at the moment, in terms of our over 65 population, in excess of 1 million of our over 65s suffer from sarcopenia. Now, sarcopenia is diagnosed when muscle mass and muscle strength drop below certain cut-off threshold points. So over 1 million over 65s at the moment. And of course, the highest prevalence you see is in those individuals aged 80 and over, i.e. the oldest old, as we often refer to them as well. So it's a highly prevalent condition, and given global population aging, it's only set to increase as well. And in that regard, it's very important we get the message out about consuming sufficient protein with every meal of the day in order to support healthy levels of muscle mass and reduce this disease condition.
Well, of course. I think even osteoporosis as well is on the rise, and that's the condition of the breakdown of the bone mass density, isn't it?
Yeah, so absolutely.
We've got a real problem here in the UK, and I think it's very easy for us to say, oh, when you're older, you know, that'll happen then, not now. But actually, the actions we take now can, of course, reduce the likelihood, surely.
Absolutely, yeah. So obviously exercise being the most important thing we can, and habit we could adopt from a young age that helps to protect our muscles and our bones as we age. But yeah, of course, consuming healthy levels of protein nutrition with every meal across the day is vitally important. I mean, we start to see disturbances in the metabolic regulation of muscle, even at middle age as well. So already we start to see that things are on the decline with regards to muscle. So it's an extremely important point to try and intervene there as well. And yes, you're absolutely right in terms of the prevalence of osteoporosis, particularly high in older women. But osteopenia, which is low levels of bone mass, is also highly prevalent in older men as well.
And I think that's where if you're going to look at the benefits of having a food group like dairy in your diet, of course it contains all the types of protein and nutrients you need, as we've discussed. So if we know dairy can play a role in health of our muscles and our bones, what about our brain health? Are there any links there?
Yeah, this is an emerging area over the last 10 years. So the link between dairy nutrition and cognitive function or brain health as well. So there are studies from the world of nutritional epidemiology, which looks at associations between various nutrients and health conditions. And so with regards to whether we can use nutritional epidemiology to set guidelines, we wouldn't really want to advise that. It's relatively low quality evidence, but nonetheless, it can reveal some interesting insights. And these nutritional epidemiology studies have revealed associations between the level of dairy intake and cognitive function as well. Similarly, if you flip that, very, very low levels of dairy intake have been associated with increased risk of poorer cognitive function, increased risk of conditions like dementia and Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, wow, so it can affect our memory.
Yeah, and following on from the epidemiology studies as well, there are an increasing number of randomised controlled trials, which is a stronger evidence base from which we can make recommendations. And again, these randomised controlled trials have started to suggest and provide interesting data to support the use of dairy for cognitive function as well. What we need now are clearer mechanisms. We don't know how it's working. So there are some interesting insights already, but we need to follow this up with mechanistic studies to find out what exactly it is in the dairy that supports cognitive function as we age.
As with everything, we just need so much more research.
Yes.
We need more studies.
And the money to do it as well.
And the funding, which is obviously very tough in the current climate. And I think in terms of, like, you mentioned memory function, it's just so many other multi-levels that we just don't think about when it comes to consuming the diet that
Absolutely.
We consume. Perhaps the message back in the, was it the 1950s or 60s, where dairy was linked to gaining weight and body fat didn't help.
No.
Because when consumed in moderation, we know that dairy is actually associated with heart health, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think you're right. Back in the 50s and 60s, there was this idea that dairy was a significant contributor to towards heart disease because of its saturated fat content as well. However, in the decades since then, the link between saturated fat and heart disease has been questioned as well. So, of course, as part of our healthy diet, we do need some saturated fat. That's important. So although the onus is on consuming low-fat sources of dairy, we do require some saturated fat to help, for example, with things like absorption of our vitamins as well. And you're absolutely right. Dairy nowadays has been associated with weight loss and improved weight management as well.
I even read lower blood pressure as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got lower blood pressure, improvements in cholesterol status as well. It's, again, there are some gaps here in terms of the mechanisms that control these things. We don't quite know what it is about dairy that helps with blood pressure, cholesterol and better heart health. But we're starting to get some indication that it may be the calcium content as well. It could potentially be an indirect mechanism because we know that, as I mentioned, dairy helps to improve satiety and feelings of fullness. And so potentially a high protein, particularly dairy diet, could help people to avoid things like snacking in between meals, for example. Yeah. And people have also started to look into the role of other compounds located deep within the milk, the dairy matrix, things like alpha-lactoglobulin. I appreciate that's relatively complex.
You don't need to remember the name, everyone. But
yeah, this is an important
cool term.
Construct of the milk matrix, which has been linked to things like improved blood pressure as well, potentially through improving how our arteries widen and constrict as well. And I guess the final mechanism people are really interested in is a relatively new term, bioactive peptides. This is something that you may hear in the kind of various nutrition blogs and whatnot. But again, located deep within the dairy matrix are these bioactive peptides. Now, they're pretty hard to see, but once dairy products become digested enzymatically, these bioactive peptides are released, and they've been linked with all kinds of important properties, antioxidants being one, for example.
Gosh, I'm completely geeking out. I love all of this information. I love the idea of the dairy matrix. It's absolutely fascinating. I think a lot of listeners are probably thinking, though, if that's moderate dairy consumption, what actually is a moderate level of dairy consumption, if we can give some kind of advice?
Yeah, sure. So in the UK, Public Health England and our government guidelines suggest or recommend intakes of 2 to 3 servings of dairy every single day. So as a portion of our whole plate every day, dairy intake is relatively small. It's somewhere less than 10%. And each serving, again, a moderate amount of dairy. So, for example, a 200 milliliter glass of milk would be considered moderate.
Yeah.
A single serving of yogurt, which is typically a 120-gram pot.
I could eat so much more than
of
that,
cheese.
Though,
well, I know, and I typically do as well. I think that in terms of the guidelines, in my opinion, that's a minimum amount that should be consumed, 3 servings a day. And again, the emphasis with the current guidelines is to try and stick mainly to sources of low-fat dairy. But again, given the relatively shaky relationship between saturated fat and heart disease and the importance of some saturated fat in our diet, I think it's perfectly safe from a health perspective for people to consume 1 to 2 servings of whole or full-fat dairy. Yeah. In a given day as well. The issue is that with the guidelines, the government tell people to try and limit full fat or whole dairy products. And of course, if you tell somebody to limit, instantly the thinking is, well, it must be bad. I should omit that component altogether. And of course, that's not the message that really should be out there.
Oh, public health nutrition is so complex. And just to explain, because I find this a lot actually when portraying any message about health or nutrition in the media, is that it's very, very difficult to do an individual approach on a mass level. I mean, everyone has different requirements.
Absolutely.
Everyone has different, technically, portion sizes each day. We don't want to overthink it. We don't want to underthink it. Just be aware, listeners, that I think the government do their best just to get the very minimum out there to advise you.
Yes, I think so. It really becomes a bit clearer when we look at specialist or populations. So we've already spoken a little bit about dairy nutrition and the importance of these nutrients in children. So below the age of 5, full-fat, whole dairy sources are recommended for children as a valuable source of additional nutrients and energy for kids. And also, given the idea that higher protein intakes in older age have been associated with a greater retention of lean mass, muscle mass and strength, we would also advise higher intake of dairy beyond the age of 65 as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think very, very good advice. I want to touch on what I think might be the kind of elephant in the room a little bit, which I think is the fact that we're now told that dairy is one of the dietary components that may have a detrimental impact on the planet. And I have a whole separate episode on this podcast dedicated to sustainability to cover this factor. But for those of us who consume dairy, how should we be adjusting our dairy consumption to account for sustainability? It can be very confusing for people.
Absolutely, yeah. The public message is one that's very confusing and just recently has been quite demonising again against dairy. My advice for people who consume dairy who are looking maybe to tailor their dairy intake to account for sustainability and climate change would be they don't need to change at all in my and it's probably not the populist opinion, but again, we a little over a decade ago that a research paper was put out and a message that the agricultural sector contributed almost as much in terms of
greenhouse gas
emissions, as the transport sector,
yeah.
So all the exhaust fumes that our cars produce, and of course that's quite a scary message. We think that our cows are essentially killing the planet. However, more contemporary statistics and results around this from very eminent climate scientists have actually shown that agriculture contributes only a very small percentage of our overall greenhouse gas emissions as well, and within that, livestock
yes.
is an even smaller relative proportion. As well, so yeah, I think if we're thinking about things we can do to save the planet, cutting out dairy and meat consumption is wouldn't be the first port of call in my recommendation. I mean, turning off the light bulbs in your house would be a greater way to contribute towards the health of the planet before you cut dairy out.
Yeah.
And a better way to look at it is, as I mentioned before, in terms of the nutrient density of dairy, if we factor that against its environmental impact and cost. We still have a product that is extremely extremely useful for population health right across the globe as well. So I would say at the moment, based on the government guidelines of 3 servings of dairy a day,
perhaps,
we don't need to cut.
Yeah, perhaps most of the population, if we're looking at things like red meat consumption and dairy, if it's excessive, that's where things do become problematic.
Yeah.
And I think potentially, I mean, I'm not an expert in this subject. I love listening to your opinion. We've had other opinions on that it's the overconsumption of anything, really, whereas actually if we do stick to the recommended amounts, mm-hmm. that's extremely beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would, you know, again, qualify that statement by saying I'm not overtly red meat and dairy, and we have 2 to 3 vegetarian meals a week in my house as
exactly.
well. And we again, everything in moderation, I think, is the right message.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And I think that's very, very important that, as I said at the beginning of the podcast, ethics, sustainability, nutritional fact. Mm. We're speaking about nutritional fact here, that dairy is extremely nourishing. And for many food groups out there, perhaps access to different types of food is poor. Mm-hmm. Dairy is a cheap and affordable source of nutrition. Absolutely. For so many that cannot access it. I mean, the BDA have suggested that even just reducing dairy consumption by 40% would have enough of a substantial impact on the planet. So actually, just have a think about what we said and obviously make your own judgments. Yeah. But a question I'd like to throw in would be about protein shakes. Mm. Before I go on to talking about dairy alternatives, because I think there's a reason that perhaps the whey type of protein shakes became very popular in the first place. Is that because of the benefits of dairy? It's just so great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Because of the benefits of dairy on human health, on a variety of tissues, then yeah, that's why protein shakes are fairly popular. And okay. You know, I think the market is more diverse than ever in terms of the protein supplements you can get off the shelf of every supermarket now.
I mean, what are your thoughts as a health professional on these different types of whey protein shakes that are out there? Do you think they have a place in the diet? Is it just more convenience? Should we stick to eating the Greek yogurt?
Yeah, it's a great question. And when we study the effects of various sources of protein on muscle, mm. And the influence of protein quality on our ability to build new muscle tissue, it's quite a difficult topic to study. So at the moment we see no clear difference between protein-rich whole foods and protein supplements. When we study these things over several hours and we look at their effects on muscle, whey protein is typically trumps mm. all of the sources. Yeah. But again, that's a very limited time period of several hours. And of course, when we consume something like an isolated whey protein off the mm. shelf, what that doesn't include that dairy does is that whole rich blend of other really important nutrients.
Yeah, and it's taken all the fat out, I suppose.
Yeah, so. Yeah, absolutely. So they tend to be, I mean, we've got things like diet protein shakes now as well. So yeah. Just the protein without any additional carbohydrate, fat, and without any fortification with really important
so that's
vitamins.
That's purely for muscle kind of development.
Yeah, yeah, those things will be for individuals who are looking to take care of their fatigue, mm. keep their body fat relatively low and build lean muscle, as it were, as well. So my opinion at the moment is I always advise a whole food approach to protein nutrition across mm-hmm. the day, if possible. But again, situations in older age, for example, where appetite becomes problematic, protein supplements can become a convenient way of ensuring that sufficient protein is delivered to those muscles. So I always say take it on a case-by-case basis, but if you can do it, then whole food is definitely the way to go.
I think that's always the overarching message. And like you said, different groups of people, the elderly with access to food, convenience, people working very busy. Like, there's so many factors to consider when it comes to nutrition. So when it comes to vegan alternatives today, then how do they stack up nutritionally, and is there anything out there that's really beneficial
in terms of the protein content? It's mm-hmm. They don't tend to stack up very well. So we have things like soy, almond and rice milk. I mean, well, the first point is they probably shouldn't really be referred to as milk, because an almond doesn't lactate.
They can't, can they? Is that why they're spelled? I think they're spelled MYLK, because they can't technically be marketed.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
MIL. Well, you've taught me something
there. Oh, goodness. Please don't quote me on that. If anyone listening knows, please drop it in the feedback. But I'm pretty sure marketing-wise, they can't say MILK, but it is MY.
Ah. Mm. Well, I'm a lot more accepting of that then,
yes.
Even though it is quite deceptive. But still, when we compare them on a gram-for-gram basis, we match them. Typically, the protein content is all but non-existent. Soy being the one non-animal based dairy alternative that does contain a source of protein and amino acids. So soy based beverages you can get the protein hit that you need for your muscles and all of the tissues. Yeah. However, what I would say about those soy based alternatives is they don't, again, contain all of the additional the nutrients that we need that are present in our dairy foods as well. So plant based alternatives fortified with vitamins and minerals and other nutrients could be one way forward. I mean, we need to think about more effective ways of using our plant-based alternatives, because again, this is a market that's on the rise at the moment. And so, I mean, right across the way from where we're speaking today, I can see two vegan places to go for lunch afterwards as well. So this is clearly a booming market. Mm-hmm. It's a popular choice. As you mentioned, people's ethics and morals are leading them more towards
Well, I believe the numbers have quadrupled of plant-based eaters in the UK now.
Absolutely. So in order to ensure that sufficient nutrients are consumed for whole body health, we need to look at what we can do in terms of improving the composition of these alternatives.
I couldn't agree more. And I think if anyone's looking at feeding their children dairy alternatives, it's very tricky because you have to be almost so clued up nutritionally wise in order to make sure that what you're not going to be getting from that dairy, you're going to get elsewhere in your diet. And it's difficult.
It really is difficult. I mean, I get the question all the time, is it possible to have healthy levels of muscle mass as one ages and to support resistance training muscle mass gains as well on a plant-based diet? And of course, it is possible to achieve that. What people who follow those types of diets need to try and do is ensure that the foods they consume are fortified with the additional vitamins and nutrients that they need as well. And also that the protein they consume contains, as I mentioned before, a full complement of those essential amino acids. So typically, our plant-based alternatives are deficient in one or several key amino acids as well. And we want to make sure that we get those amino acids, again, because they support our cellular health and function.
So like you said, soy is the most similar profile. And actually, for anyone that consumes dairy or doesn't consume dairy, looking at these athletes can be quite inspiring because you've got athletes that have a dairy-rich diet and you have athletes that don't. But remember, the ones that don't, like the famous vegan athletes, I think it's Serena Williams vegan, and it's just very, very famous people.
I always forget the names and the headlines. Yeah,
there's so many of them. Absolutely. I definitely wrote it down. But they have all the guidance in the world to get in access to the information, the healthiest options out there. I wrote an ebook on how to eat plant-based in January last year because the rise in Veganuary was so big. I was actually kind of concerned that no one was given any information about where to get these nutrients from.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's a huge problem. So if you combine different sources of plant-based protein, it's possible to meet your essential amino acid needs. So all your tissues are healthy and turning over at an appropriate rate.
And with reformulation of these products, what about sugar content? Is that something as well that is being looked at?
Yeah, so there are two types of sugar in our dairy. There's obviously the sugar that's a natural part of the dairy, which is our lactose. Again, that some people have an intolerance to.
Yes.
And of course, in milk-based or dairy-based products, we often get added sugars on top of our natural lactose as well. So there is a big government push from 2015 to 2020. The goal is really to reduce the sugar content by 20%. In a whole host of different beverages, but that also including dairy products as well. Again, things like the protein shakes that you see from various companies on the shelves, that with a little bit of dairy in there, but with added sugars to enhance the flavour, the flavour profile as well. And also things like yogurts as well contain often a lot of additional sugars and sweeteners in order to increase palatability and sales, no doubt.
No, of course. Well, one last question from me before I move on to questions from our audience. So many people do fear dairy due to the fact they believe it contains things like pus, hormones, antibiotics. What is the truth on this?
Well, in the UK, it's illegal to use hormones to increase milk production as well. So I think in some countries that's still part of the process as well. So to inject or to introduce to cows synthetic versions of hormones to increase their milk production is not a legal practice in the UK under EU law. It's another great thing the EU does for us as well. It's not a
political
podcast.
Who knows the timing of this podcast and when it will be out and what's happening.
And of course, you know, there are natural hormones occurring in cows as well. And when we collect their milk, there is the presence of hormones there as well. But when we consume dairy products, again, because a hormone essentially is a protein, as we digest these proteins in our gut, our splanchnic region, a lot of that those hormones are essentially taken out, and so they don't ever really reach our circulation to exert biological or physiological effects. Again, so I think it's in terms of the hormones, it really isn't so much to worry about. And again, milk is batch tested to look for the presence of these things as well. And there are set levels out there below which dairy needs to fall in order for it to be available for mass consumption. Yeah. And the question around antibiotics, of course, cows get sick as well. And antibiotics will be used to treat any sickness or illness in cows. But certainly in the UK, the practice is that those animals are isolated from the rest of the herd and treated separately, and their milk is not used until the presence of antibiotics is below levels that are acceptable, again, under EU law.
Well, so, I read somewhere the UK that 99% of cow's milk is free of antibiotics. So
yeah,
it's
extremely high. And again, I get where the scare stories come from, because, of course, if you were consuming a hormone that was present in an animal, this has been linked with all kinds of things like early puberty in children as well, and certain types of cancer. But as I mentioned, the presence of these hormones, if you were to actually test in a person's blood, is extremely low to non-existent.
Yeah, no, that's good to know. Thank you so much. And I remember that in the UK, we're very I don't know where you're listening from. I know we have lots of listeners in other countries. Mm-hmm. So just maybe check with your government guidelines and your registered health professionals if you have any questions. So we have questions from our audience now for you. I don't believe you've seen these, so okay. I'm just going to put you on the spot a little bit, Lee. Marvin has said, does dairy make acne worse? I've heard mixed things.
Well, yeah, I'm not a skin physiologist, but my understanding is, if you read the reports from Dairy UK and other dairy providers and institutes across the UK and the EU, there's no strong evidence to link dairy consumption with acne as well. So if you have acne already, it won't make it more severe. Mm-hmm. If you don't have acne, you won't all of a sudden develop acne. If you've never been a dairy consumer and you take on this new dietary habit, it won't have harmful effects on your skin. If anything, as I mentioned before, the nutrients and the vitamins in dairy can support skin health as well. So there's really no link there. And it's nothing to do with hormones or pus.
And only if you are lactose intolerant will you experience severe effects in your body, physiological effects.
Absolutely,
of
having
dairy.
Indeed, yeah. Lactose intolerance, yes, you'll experience a little bit of discomfort as well. But again, certain dairy products are not necessarily that rich in lactose as well. So things like yogurts and certain cheeses don't necessarily have a high lactose content. Yeah. So beyond milk, there are other ways to try and get dairy into your diet.
That's a very good point to make, actually, with the lactose. Camilla has said, which cheese is best to eat from a nutritional perspective?
Wow. Well, I'm a big cheese fan. The cheese board at my house at Christmas is
I think there's lots
is
of
a
cheese
splendid
fans.
Thing. Yeah. I guess it depends on your health goals. But again, if we're going on the government guidelines, so a protein-rich cheese with all the vitamins and the additional nutrients that we need for whole body health, steering towards a low-fat option if weight management was mm-hmm. something to consider, then things like low-fat cottage cheese and quark mm-hmm. are fantastic sources of cheese as well. They tend to be a little bit lower in fat, but they have all the protein content and other nutrients you would need as well.
Okay.
Again, if you were looking for something that you would class as a little more indulgent or at least
tasty.
A sourced... Yeah, tasty. Yeah, I think you and I view it as tasty. A way to get that important saturated fat into your diet. Then something like a Gloucestershire cheese would be a way to do that.
Lovely. Great question there. Joey has said, my five-year-old son doesn't like water but will drink milk. Is drinking milk better than nothing, or should I be limiting his intake?
Wow, that's a really an unusual question. I've never come across that one before. So I don't think there's any need. There's certainly no evidence to suggest that the very high dairy intake that this child is consuming would be of any harm at the moment. But again, it does fall outside these government guidelines, even for children who need slightly more dairy to support their growth as well. Again, it would all depend on the type of milk being consumed as well. But 5 year old obviously is right on the cusp of the point where you might start to introduce lower fat milk. So you are skimmed or semi skimmed options as well. So I'm assuming from the question this is whole milk.
I'd assume so. He hasn't specified. I would be a bit concerned, Jerry, about hydration there, not drinking any water. But no, like Lee said, you don't need to limit the milk. Just make sure that your son's adequately hydrated.
Yeah,
somehow.
I think that's right. I mean, without knowing the amounts we're talking about here, the volumes, it's a little alarming that, milk, it would be the only thing to drink. So in terms of, I would certainly want to introduce some water or another type of
even maybe
liquid
squash
beverage.
Or
a little bit of squash is fine.
Yeah,
sugar-free squash would be great.
Yeah. Actually, it leads us on to the next question, the last one. Kelly has said, what is best, skimmed milk, semi-skimmed or full fat?
Wow, again, difficult. In terms of the difference between let's take whole fat and semi-skimmed as an example, the difference really lies mainly in the saturated fat content. In terms of the additional nutrients, the calcium, the phosphorus, potassium that's contained in there, there's not really an awful lot of difference as well. I think whole milk might have slightly more vitamin A in there, but again, not at the levels where if you stuck to one milk, you would become vitamin A deficient, for example. So I think if we're talking about weight maintenance here, and again going with the government guidelines of a source of dairy erring towards the lower fat side, then your semi-skimmed or your skimmed would probably be the way to go if you consumed 2 or 3 servings of that a day as well. But it shouldn't be too harmful to consume the whole milk as well on one occasion.
There you go. Now we now move on to the fact or fiction round of the podcast.
Okay.
Okay.
I didn't see this one coming.
No. Nope. So to spring this on you, if you could kindly answer fact or fiction. I know, I appreciate it's always hard for an academic to do this kind of question. to the following questions.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Fact, yes.
Brilliant. Good start. Okay, dairy makes us fat.
Fiction.
Milk contains sugar.
Fact.
Skimmed milk is the healthiest type.
Fiction.
Dairy can cause cancer.
Fiction.
Organic milk is healthier than non-organic.
Fiction.
Plant-based milks have less nutrition than dairy.
Fact.
Most people can't digest lactose.
Fiction.
Dairy triggers acne.
Fiction.
Dairy intolerances are commonplace.
Fact.
Ah.
Well, I mean, they are commonly reported place, yeah. but I think the reality is close to fiction.
Okay. We should ditch dairy.
Oh, absolutely fiction.
There we go. That was actually the most concise fact or fiction round we've ever had.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I thought I had to stick very rigidly to it.
You did really well.
I could have elaborated on a few.
Can you elaborate on the organic thing? I think people have this big phobia that unless everything is organic with dairy, it's just not good for them.
Yeah, again, to the best of my knowledge, the main difference between organic and non-organic milks really is the way the cows are reared. And so we're talking about the absence of fertilizers and potentially other harmful chemicals as well in that production. But again, important to note that these chemicals don't somehow make their way into the milk that we consume as well. But in terms of the nutrient content of the milk, which is really what you and I are talking about today, there's not an awful lot of difference between the two. Of course, with organic milk, the increased risk of a potentially adverse reaction, because it's obviously not undergone the same processing as non-organic products increases as well. So that's another point to consider. But nutritionally, there's not an awful lot of difference between those two forms.
There you go. Great question. So that nearly wraps up the entire episode. But as with every guest, we finish with a food for thought. So mine today would be that there are so many benefits associated with consuming dairy. And these include less well-known benefits, like Lee has explained today, relating to heart health and brain health, which I found fascinating, as well as the ability to aid healthy bone and muscle health. Ultimately, when consumed in moderation, remember we discussed this with the Eat Well plate and what moderation is, dairy can be a really useful source of nutrients for many people, including protein, calcium and phosphorus, amongst so many others. However, we also need to be mindful of the impact dairy may have on the planet, and relying on dairy for a proportion of your nutrition needs whilst taking the opportunity to seek nutrition from a range of non-dairy sources too can help the planet as well as increase the diversity of your diet and maybe even help your gut health too. So I think the overarching message is do what works for you, but just be conscious about it. If I could ask you, Lee, to leave our listeners with anything that you think may benefit them, one food for thought, what would that be?
Probably the same message I always finish most of my talks with, which is that the dietary protein recommendations for our public, that's all adults age 19 and over, are set at 0.8 grams per kilo of body mass a day. And it's thought that that's way below the target we actually need to try and get to as well. So our protein recommendations from our government are quite low. So my food for thought really would be to try and find ways to increase your protein intake at all meals throughout the day as well, aiming for somewhere around about 50% beyond the current guidelines.
Brilliant. Lee, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and coming on the podcast today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to what is the last episode of Series 5 of Food for Thought. Having explored so many topics over the past 12 weeks, I really hope you've learned how our bodies really are as unique as our personalities. So each of us should strive to find a way of living and a healthy lifestyle that works for us individually. Your 5-star ratings and your positive reviews, all the suggestions have been simply amazing to read. And if you are keen for Series 6, guys, of Food for Thought, then please do subscribe so that we can reach even higher highs in the charts and help more people to make informed choices about their health and well-being. For more information about my nutrition clinic, the books, healthy recipes, events, retreats, and so much more, please visit nutrition.com. You can also follow me on @nutrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.